Welcome to Your Mind Matters, MPL's first ever mental health awareness podcast where we discuss mental health and all things related. My name is Lana Bolijak with the Education and Literacy Department.
And my name is Bassam Habib with Be Well at NPL. And today we have the Honorable Cynthia Moynihan, NPL's very own equal access advocate with us today for a great conversation.
Hey, girl.
Let's get it.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. This is so exciting. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. We're excited to be in community with you and in conversation with you. And we've chatted for a minute earlier, so
yeah, we've been talking for like an hour.
Yeah, and it's been flowing. It's been so I could tell like the minute that you walked in, I was like, "This is about to be so good.
This is going to be so much fun." And I'm feeling the same way. Walked in, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, you both are so incredible." So this is making it that much more exciting to be here.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
Let's do it.
Well, we always start with an icebreaker with all of our guests, just to like loosen up and get things out of the way. And Bassam really wanted to ask you this question. Nature versus nurture, what are your thoughts?
It's interesting. I think it's absolutely, I think that term first came out like 1897, somewhere around there. And there was a lot of studies that have been done since that time, but actually it goes back centuries. I mean, it goes back thousands of years of talking nature versus nurture. One of the things I thought was interesting was, is because you were talking about that and saying that we might discuss that today, that they're actually changing terminology now to genetic and environment.
Yes.
So to me, genetic and environment probably makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
But nature versus nurture, I think it's definitely a combination of both. You have nature, which is what you're born with, what you have, what your genetic traits are, and then you have nurture, which is your family, your environment, your surroundings, and your experiences that you have and how that impacts. There are people that might be born in terms of nature that you would think can't get from point A to point B that do, despite nurture. And vice versa. So, but I definitely think it's paramount of the two. I think there's no way that you can actually segregate those.
It's a combo.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I guess, like the genetic aspect is either like it's assisted based off of how your environment is. So, like, we kind of talked briefly about this too, like, this idea of like people who are like born with like aggression or violence or whatever. And like maybe if their environment was a place where people noticed that and were able to get them help early on, and like then they wouldn't go down this path, you know. I don't know.
I got deep into the Peter Neubauer stuff, like the psychiatrist who did the twin study in the 50s and 60s,
yes.
That's still hidden in, like, he locked it away in the Yale library, so we won't know the results of the study until 2066. It's crazy. But I got down the rabbit hole of that, and then I started reading about it, and I was like, I'm leaning more towards nurture is, like, can triumph over nature. Like, you can be born with certain attributes, but depending, the nurture environment part is what makes or breaks what you have, I guess.
Yeah.
So. I absolutely agree with that. I think that, you know, because nature is going to give you what it's going to give you.
Yeah.
But nurture is really an opportunity to, and it's interesting, like they studied a tribe, and they were a tribe that was in a very remote location and had no outside impact whatsoever. So whenever they had individuals that came in and started to converse with them and to interact and to find out, you know, like their language and their words and what they use, they said, well, what would be your word for jealousy? And they looked, they just had a blank look, like jealousy wasn't even a concept.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not know jealousy, and it was not a part of their tribe.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what we have, like different emotions that I think that we have here, and in particular in America, I think a lot of that is through nurture.
Yeah. And like biology only has so many ways to do things, like it seems like, because like there's there's like we share DNA with like apes and rocks and like stars in the galaxy and stuff. Yeah. So there's only like so much material that makes nature, but nurture is like vast. It's like the belief systems and like the imagination, and it like opens up the world of like anything is possible.
Yeah.
So I romanticize nurture. So I don't know if I'm like,
same.
I don't know.
I love that romanticize. I love that. Like, I think that's.
I wish it was all nurture because it makes me feel more like in control of my life. So, but
don't trigger me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God. No, yeah, for sure. I agree. I was going to ask you too, when you were talking about the remote tribe, because there's a book that I had to read in college that I kind of didn't read because I didn't like it. It's called Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes. And it's about this like missionary who he wrote a book about him and his family. They went to the Amazon and were trying to like convert this remote tribe similar. And he's like writing all about his experience, and the experience made him lose his faith. And he basically like stopped being a missionary and stopped being a Christian because like we're trying to tell these people about Jesus and like tell them, you know, that they need to be saved. And they have like no concept of what that needing to be saved is.
They didn't feel the need to be saved.
Yeah. And they had their own, like they already had their own way of living, their own way of being. They were like, we don't need to change. Like, what do you mean? And it made him like rethink his entire perspective of this idea that people need to think one way. And the parts that I read were really interesting. I didn't like the book, so I was like,
you're going to need to loop back around, right? So read it, right?
I read like half of it.
Okay.
And then I never reread it, and I do want to now because I was way more religious at the time, so it was triggering to read at the time, and I feel a lot different now, so I think it would be less triggering for me to read it now.
Well, and that's a fabulous example of the nurture.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you also had experiences and different things that impacted your interpretation of the material you were reading.
Yeah.
And so that led to, okay, wait a minute, I'm not ready for this right now. And then you can come back and you find out later that, okay, yeah, now I'm ready.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it is. It's timing, it's experiences, it's, you know, a combination of all those variables, or going out and meeting new people or getting yourself in a different environment. And I know my children would love to chat on that religious affiliation thing because I did the same thing on raising them on the, and they ask a lot of very intelligent questions in relation to, because is religion really open or not? And I know we're not talking about that here, but it rolls back around to what is the essence of what can make a difference? And especially like if we're talking about disabilities, if we're talking about different things like that, or just life in general, that if I think we had more people that could clearly understand about that nurture aspect, and to incorporate that from birth all the way through. I mean, just imagine the possibilities, because I joke sometimes and I say, you know, if aliens come here, I'm going to be a little embarrassed about saying I'm human.
For sure. For sure. I'm claiming birds. I'm part of the birds. So, I align with them a lot more than humans.
Yeah.
Nature versus nurture, genes versus environment.
Yeah.
I like my blue jeans.
Okay. Yeah.
And my environment. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
She did say she was going to sing.
I did. There you go. No, I'm done.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Do you guys want to get into the meat and potatoes?
Yeah. Let's get into the meat and potatoes.
The meat and potatoes.
Yeah, let's do it.
A little gravy on the side.
A little gravy, a little mac and cheese. Now I'm hungry. Okay, Cynthia. So we'll start this off with just asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, what you've done. Share as much as you'd like or as little as you'd like.
Well, I'm just an amazing person.
True.
Yes,
true.
Yes.
We agree.
Great starting point. It's a very good starting point.
I was born hard of hearing, and then I went deaf later. So I've been deaf probably like over 30 years. But growing up, They found my hearing loss in third grade. And at that time, they called my parents and said they thought something was wrong with the test because I was a straight-A student. Back then, they associated hearing loss with the fact that you probably could not be intelligent. Mm. So then later, I was at home, and my mother was correcting me for something, and I told her I didn't hear her. She sent me to my room. I come down later, and she said, "Did you hear me?" I said, "No." She said, "We're going to go to the audiologist, and you better have a hearing loss." And sure enough, we went, and I did. So I grew up with hearing loss. By high school, what I have is a cookie bite loss. Mm-hmm. And what that means is on an audiogram, you can have low, medium, and high sounds. And the cookie bite is all in that mid-range. And that's mm-hmm. where the majority of communication is. So I always had the low and I always had the high, but the communication part was difficult. Mm. So come to find out, I was learning how to lip read, but I didn't even know I was doing that. Mm. I went from elementary school to middle school. And middle school all of a sudden opens up this realm of discussions or flying all over the place. Who knows what's up? I was already 5'7", and I'm like leaning against the wall and sticking my feet out and tripping everybody as they're trying to pass me in the hallway, trying to be the right height. And yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to communicate. Well, I couldn't figure out what was wrong because my audiogram had not changed, but I wasn't understanding as much. So we happened to go to my pediatrician, and he had me in the office, and he said, "I'm going to ask you a question." And he said, "I'm going to put my hand over my mouth. I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to answer it." I said, "Fine." So he put his hand over his mouth. He asked me the question. I had no clue. He put his hand down, and he asked the question, and he asked me what color his eyes were. And to this day, I can remember nurture that he said, "You are lip reading. Now you need to learn how to maintain eye contact and mm-hmm. lip read."
Wow.
So it was like a major pivotal moment in my life that, number one, I learned I was lip reading, and number two, I realized that I've been staring at everyone's mouth, and no wonder everybody was like backing away. They all thought something was wrong with, you know, that I wasn't maintaining eye contact. Mm. And so when I went into high school, by then my mid-range was pretty much shot, but I still did. I was mainstreamed. I did basketball, volleyball, all that. I'm not saying I did it well. I'm just saying I did it. So, and then went on to college, and it was in college that the hearing loss really, really, really started to bottom out. So I was in a large classroom, 450 students in the classroom, professors walking back and forth, and there's no way for me to lip read. I was asking for help from other students and like if I could borrow their notes and things like that. They weren't really comfortable with that because mm-hmm. they felt like I should be doing my own due diligence and mm-hmm. my own note writing. And I asked the counselors for help at the school. And the counselors, I said, "Can I get in small classes? What else can be done to be of assistance?" And they told me I just needed to take more hours, that I was bored. I was taking 21 hours. I had a full load. I did not need to be taking any more hours. So it was at that point that, you know, talking with the parents, my mom said, "All right, we're going to go ahead and get you back home, and then we're going to see if we can assess what's really going on." So I was out for 6 months. They did testing. At that point, they felt like it was genetic. There's two DNA. Actually, I only knew about the one until about 5 years ago. That was attributing to the cookie bite loss. It's not very common. And it usually doesn't hit until your 30s or 40s. So you're a normal hearing person, and then the hearing loss will start to go 30s, 40s, 50s. In my case, it started in third grade. Later, much later, whenever I had my cochlear implant, it was my surgeon that told me, because I said, "You know, I kind of got a unique situation here." And he was like, "Yeah, no kidding." And he said, and "I don't mean that as a compliment." He said, "You have two DNA chromosomes that are out of whack." And he said, "So you're an extremely unique because your hearing loss started in third grade and it shouldn't have even started until like 30s or 40s.
Wow.
So at any rate, going back to the college, I was able to go ahead and transition. I went to Belmont and so Belmont graduate. I was able to graduate in 4 years, pulled all that off, and was working while I was doing so. And then I went to work, and then about 7 years later, I went back and got my MBA there. And that was another big challenge. I look back, I truly sometimes don't know how I did it. But again, it falls back to that mind over matter, that, you know, if you go for it and you want it, then you can find a way to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So I finished grad school. In grad school, we worked full time. So you went on the weekends and on weekdays in the evening. And that was a 2-year program. So graduated from that and then moved on and did a lot of other different jobs. But my passion was always obviously with hearing loss. So I later started working with Hearing Loss Association of America, HLAA, ALDA, Association of Late Deaf and Adults, Say What Club, SWC, a lot of different organizations, and got entrenched as a volunteer working on the board, either as like a vice president or whatever I did. And that is where the real passion truly kicked in as far as it goes with equal access and advocacy, because through all of that, I was being introduced to a variety of disabilities, not just hearing loss, not just, you know, the late deafened or the deaf. And I also obtained a hearing dog. And the hearing dog was a real eye-opener into a lot of other, what you refer to as disabilities. Mm-hmm. And with the hearing dog, what happened there was, is I was able to go to Canine Companions, and they offer dogs free to people in need. My audiologist spent about 3 years telling me to get a dog. And she said, because when I went deaf later, she said, I don't want you to start to withdraw because you're very passionate, outgoing, you love socializing, you love being engaged with people. I'm kind of seeing that step back a little bit. You're slowly kind of like regressing. And I finally made the decision. I went ahead and said, okay, I did the application. You have to go through the process and get approved. And then up until I actually got accepted and I was actually at the class, it's a 2-week training class that you go to because the dog's already trained. They're training the person. I show up, and up till that day, I still was not sure why I needed a working dog. And part of that was, and I talked with everybody else that was there, and then we got to talk with people that not just for hearing dogs, but for other disabilities. And the story was, there was a common thread for everybody that was there. They all felt like someone else would need the dog more than they did. And when you work so hard to be independent, there was this concept of, what's going to happen because all of a sudden I have this dog? And it's going to what? It's going to let you know that I have a disability. It's going to let you know that I can't hear. And here I am working so hard to appear normal, to appear okay. So whenever I got the dog, though, that was a huge, 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 another wonderful moment of, because I was late deaf, and whenever I would converse with people, it got to the point where I wouldn't always see the smile. Because by the time I realized they were talking to me, they went from, oh, I'm so excited, I want to talk to you, oh, there's Cynthia, to like, why isn't she responding to me? Why isn't, so the frown, the crown, you know, that the smile's gone on the face, that's what I would see more often. When I got the dog, it opened up the world again. And ironically enough, I had so many friends, even my family, all of my close friends, I was married, I had 2 children by then. Everybody was saying the same thing, that it was like, oh my gosh, you really can't hear. It was a huge eye-opener. Mm-hmm. So with the dog, that also led to working with other people that had different disabilities. And one of the things that we loved was the working dogs were kind of like a representation of what we're talking about, what we were talking about before we actually came on here, mm-hmm. That nurture, that environment, that how one little thing can change so much. And what the dog does is when you come into a room, let's say you have a young child in a wheelchair rolling into a classroom and the only one in a wheelchair that's utilizing a wheelchair. The other children are in the room and they're looking around and they see something that's different. So they see a child that's in a wheelchair. That might be their first time to see it. They are maybe not certain on how to approach or what to say or what to do. Now that same child comes in the room and has a working dog. And that dog is sitting right there, and the child, what do? They're going to, oh, my gosh, you have a dog. Yep. What is that? Well, go, what's the dog's name? Tell me more.
Yep.
And it's the bridge. And the bridge is so magical each and every time. So the dog does the introduction that leads right up to the person. And then all of a sudden, the concept of a disability is non-existent.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's opened the door to a conversation like a magician.
Yeah. One of the best teachers I've ever had in my life told me to be more like a dog. She was just like, be like a dog. That's just the best way to be. Mm-hmm. Because that's how you create a safe space. Because dogs are magic. They create safe spaces.
Yeah. I mean, they do. And they're smart. They stretch when they get up in the morning.
Yeah.
They, you know, they eat a balanced meal. I think that's fabulous.
Did you ever find out who in your family shares the same DNA and genes that you had that had hearing loss?
That's a really good question because they always thought it was my mom's side. Mm-hmm. And it hits every other generation, and it hits the females. So, like, my kids will be fine. But at any rate, but then my father had shown me an audiogram that he had later because he has the hearing loss. And it's a cookie bite. And I am just like, so I've already asked, I've been emailing different audiologists around the country, and I've been sharing this information and getting the feedback because I am so curious about this. Wow. So curious. Yeah.
So your dad also has hearing loss.
His was much later in life, though.
Okay.
His was much later
in
life.
Yours just kicked in way earlier than it should.
Right. Wow. So, and it was so funny because even like whenever I got activated with cochlear implants, finally, I did my first cochlear implant in 2019. Mm. And then I did my second one last year. And when I was getting activated, before with both hearing aids in, I could hear 22%. So major lip reader and just, you know, and did whatever. And then with the first one that was activated, it didn't sound normal. It was like a helium balloon. It took a lot of time to balance that out. But I heard right away, and I was hearing complete sentences and complete words, and it was just mind-boggling. And I was like at 90% with one cochlear implant.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Reading lips without looking at them sounds like impossible to me.
I don't get it.
That sounds like something.
It's a magician.
How do you do it? Like, how would you even? I guess you have a really good like side eye. You would have a really good bottom eye or something.
Like, if
I'm looking at your lips, I can't look at your eyes, and I'm like, it would just be so hard.
Actually, it's really not. Because if you think about it, communication is all about the whole body.
Yeah.
So really, you're not just looking at. So, I mean, it's just a matter of, again, that goes back to just if you haven't had a need to do that, then, okay, so if all of a sudden you're learning something new over time, you naturally are probably going to focus more on the lips. Mm-hmm. But then you can gravitate to where, or had I known and someone was teaching me up front, I might have started out from the get-go with just maintaining the eye contact up front. I didn't know I was learning to lip read.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, to answer your question, though, you know, but we do have a tendency of if we have someone that has a beard or a mustache, we always bring a razor and
just shave this part.
Hey, so you need to shave your beard
right
now.
I'll just shave this part.
So
right
Cynthia can read your lips.
Oh, so you wouldn't be able to read my lips, I guess, if I had my mustache longer.
Some people are easier to read lips than others.
Okay.
And so it does make a difference on the lip movement and the facial hair and things like that. I have a very dear friend of mine, and her husband insists he's got the very long beard and he's got the mustache that overlaps. And you really can't read his lips.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time I literally did. I gave him, whenever he showed up at the hearing loss convention, and I had a little gift for him, and it was a razor and a shaving cream. And whatever. And I was like, you know, I said, it's about time that you're a little nicer to your wife there. And now she can understand him, and he is so awesome, and he is so supportive of hearing loss, but yeah. I find it intriguing that he still wants to maintain that facial hair, which makes it difficult to lip read.
Yeah.
Something about a beard is just once you get it, it's hard
to
let go of that. Yeah.
You know, I really, I really
too. So, yeah, it's just like, play with that beard. Now we're all playing with our imaginary beards now.
I can only imagine just to self-soothe, just, oh.
Yeah, you guys can just imagine. So,
I don't know.
Well, I'm trying, but it's not working yet. Yeah. I'm trying to grow that beard, and I'm not having any luck.
I don't think I have enough testosterone or something.
Yeah, it's the testosterone, yep. I'm all testosterone. My testosterone levels are really high. That's why this is happening.
For those of you who have never seen Bassam, he has the most immaculate beard that you've ever seen in your entire life.
Oh, yep. He truly does.
He really does.
You have a beautiful beard.
Thank you.
It's shaped well, and you can still read your lips very easily.
I try to be mindful of who wants to read my lips when I'm grooming my beard. I want to, you know, consider that people can still read my lips. So,
no, absolutely. In your case, they definitely can. They can. So. You know, now what you don't want to do though is like I had an individual that I was with for and go across the room and then would straighten their mouth out, okay, and kind of put their teeth together and not move their lips and then say, she's trying to read my lips from across the room and do it and would mess with me so that I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. If I was if I was your brother or grew up with you or something, I'd probably be kind of, you know,
trying to mess with
lovingly messing with you. Yeah. Or I would just say things.
Can you still read my lips now?
Yeah.
That's actually kind of a good tip if you're like a gossiper. I mean, I love tea and I love to like talk. I can't curse. Talk.
Yeah, yeah. Talk shoot.
Talk shoot. Yeah. Shoot the stuff. Anyway. I don't know. I get paranoid, but I like to like spill, and I'm like, I would hate if somebody was like, ooh, what is she?
getting engrossed in that. Well, we got to read her lips.
Yeah.
Do you realize what she's saying?
Listen, I have the tea a lot of the time, so now I know that people can probably read
different
my
types
lips.
Of tea as well.
Different
you have,
types. I have
caffeinated
herbal.
Tea and
I got
herbal tea for sure.
I got green, black. What do you want? I got all the tea.
So, when you were growing up, though, how did the like hearing loss? How did that affect your mental health as you were growing up from childhood?
It's extremely challenging.
To college to adult.
Yeah. It's extremely challenging, being blunt. A lot of people will look at me and they think that I hear quite frequently that, oh, you know, life is just wonderful and it's so easy for you. I hear that a lot.
Wow.
It's like, it's so easy for you. It's like, and I think it goes back to that nature versus nurture. They're like, oh, nature, you were just born this way. And so everything will just be peaches and cream for you.
Yeah.
And so, but here on this podcast, I do think it's important to focus on that mental aspect.
Yeah.
Because if I couldn't understand what was being said, then it affected even just from a child, the friends that I had. I could naturally hear male versus female more. So I was hanging out with males a lot more, and I was kind of a tomboy. So I would love to, you know, play football, do whatever, and all of that. And so I had to gravitate to learn how to communicate with girls more. And girls have a tendency to, like, shift topics from, you know, one to the other and five different guys are just black and white and simple. I'm going to go for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for, you know,
yeah.
So.
Hey, I'm glad you said it, not me.
Just in general, and this is just in the early years, not men, you know.
Yeah,
men
yeah.
are very, very, very fabulous talkers, communicators. So.
Yeah.
But anyways, so that was difficult. And then the lighting. So depending on lighting, I couldn't lip read. So if you had people that were getting together in the evenings and they wanted to, or sleep over or whatever, it was extremely difficult for me to be able to communicate. it affected every single aspect of it. But I was always told that the world is not going to come to you. You go out to the world, you mm-hmm. adapt, and you make it work. I loved, loved, loved learning from older individuals. So when my parents would have people come over and get together, I was craving being in the room and just hearing the conversations and what was being said. And I remember my mom got to the point where she could read my body language, and she knew when I understood something and when I missed it. And so I remember one time I was like 11 or 12, and my mother, they had a get-together the night before, had all this amazing conversation, a lot of really interesting stuff. We get up the next day, and my mom says, tell me about what you heard and what you, you know, and I was proud as a peacock, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just talking away about everything I heard, how wonderful it is. And then she said, let me tell you everything you did not hear. And you could have heard a pin drop in the room at that point. Well, I couldn't, but somebody else who was hearing could. So at any rate, I realized at that point, and it was, I was extremely grateful that she did it later. At the time, it was very painful. But it was the eye-opener that I needed as to what I was missing out on, because that helped me to realize, because the problem with certain disabilities, not just hearing loss, but the problem, especially with hearing loss, though, is that what you don't hear doesn't exist. It's not like eyes, where if the eyes start to go, then you know. I mean, that's pretty, you know, if you're born that way, it's different. But if you're losing it over time, but whenever, so if your eyes start to go, you have something that gives you a cue that lets you know that you are losing your eyesight or there's a problem. With hearing loss, it doesn't happen that way. And on the average, it takes 7 to 8 years for somebody to do something about their hearing loss if they're losing their hearing. So rolling back around to your question, I can remember wanting to be so engaged. I love outside-the-box conversations and the abstracts and all that. And I would want to be so involved and trying to lip read. And there were times whenever I just couldn't do it, and I would be so tired at the end of the day, to really listen, and especially when you're lip reading and everything, and you're in high, it's like an adrenaline rush for the entire day, and then you crash. So at the end of the day, I would be so wiped out and tired. And then if I was home with family or if I was out with friends, they would be like, well, come on, you know, you got to stay in high gear. And remember, you got to, oh, you can't be tired now. You got things to do. You've got errands to get done. You got homework to finish. You got whatever. And I just wanted to go in a corner and cry. I just wanted someone to just say, you know, stop. But I realized that if I was going to be a part of that hearing world and out there, then that's what I needed to do to adapt.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, like, very profound. What you don't hear doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Is, like, a very profound thing that has me thinking about a lot of things now. Like, how many things am I not hearing throughout the day?
But you could also take that into the hearing world, because I think there are more hearing people that are not hearing today than ever before. And it goes back to social media. It goes back to all that stuff. So I really feel like there are so many hearing people that I think do not hear as much as people do with hearing loss.
Yeah.
The disability is actually can be an advantage because you're focused on really understanding.
That's such a symbolic, because like that, now you're talking about like the art of listening, like how to feel seen in a relationship.
Which we talked about with Jennifer. And it's on this podcast, episode 4.
Hearing, I guess if you're more focused on hearing, are you more focused like on the abstract, like you're saying, or the meta kind of hearing of like, are you really listening to this person in front of you that's trying to tell you something?
Or like when, well, you had mentioned about how like when you were lip reading and how it's really the whole face that you engage with when you're trying to communicate. And I think that's something that we, like you said, like hearing people don't pay attention to all of the different types of ways that we are trying to communicate and connect with each other. Like I can be saying something, but my tone or the look on my face or my body language or the just overall like vibe of a person, like if you're not really paying attention to that, you miss so much even when you do hear them verbally.
Yeah.
So I don't,
yeah. You're not hearing me.
That's what, well, and also, you know what a lot of people do is they're already, like in a conversation, they're already anticipating what they want to say in response. Mm-hmm. So yeah. They're not even listening to what you're saying. They're focused on something else. And that rolls around to also, like with other disabilities, like anxiety and autism and all those other disabilities, cognitive disorders, that ties in with all of that. So there might be different ways. So the goal of communication should be, and in my humble opinion, should be just that you slow down, mm-hmm. that you focus, like we're doing in this room.
Yeah.
You know, that we haven't lost eye contact. No one's reaching for their phone. No one's getting sidetracked. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Had a mini panic. I was like, wait, let me check
my phone real quick. Wait a minute. What am I missing out on? And I'm joking. But and anyway, so it's empowering mm-hmm. to be where it's like not only am I having a conversation, but that conversation is both ways. It is, you know, and we're all learning something. We're all giving back. We're all focused on the person that's communicating. We're not overlapping. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is the essence of effective communication that you would want to have with any disability. Yeah. Because you don't need to focus on what's, I don't want to say the word wrong, because a disability doesn't mean that something's wrong. It just means it's different.
Yeah.
And so, but the essence of anything that we do in life boils down to the art of communication, effective communication, and finding that right means. So if you are looking at me and you all of a sudden realize I've got a like a question, or I'm leaning in or something, by looking at my body language, you might say, oh, okay, wait a minute. She might not be hearing me. She might not. I can slow down. I can change the word that I used. If I was saying, you know, how do you feel today? Maybe I need to ask something, a different question that they can relate to. So it's paying attention to that body language, and it's paying attention to the person, and you can naturally find a way that does work to communicate without drawing out what you might feel are differences or, you know, things that you don't need to focus on. It's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, that was going to be my first icebreaker question, is like, what other ways other than speaking do you like to communicate? Like, that was initially what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah. with communication, I think, like, with a for me, and actually, I am not fluent in American Sign Language. I do sign, but I am not fluent in American Sign Language. Signing, I think, is a fabulous means of communication. And it's one because you can be across the room, and you can, and it's quiet, and it's, but, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's magical, especially if you're interpreting songs and things of that nature. Yeah. I think it's just amazing to see. And then they have special interpreters that are performers, and they do like for concerts
stuff,
and also like rap and all of that. Have you ever seen where they get in and they can just
so much fun to watch, actually.
It is powerful.
They have so much energy, and it's like, it's almost more entertaining than watching the actual show, because they'll be doing the dances and everything. Yeah, it's really exciting.
And it's so fast.
Yeah.
And they're doing it like on the spot. Now, I mean, they do a lot of times, and also, like, especially with rap, it can where they're going off the cuff. And so the interpreter has to be going at that speed that entire time. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said that, I mean, I actually, because I've met several of them, and I am like, you guys need to be doing this all the time. I'm in agreement with you. I think it's actually more entertaining sometimes than the actual.
Are they
the
not
actual performers
doing it? Are they not doing it all the time? Because I feel like I've done like some interpretation, like in translation work, like. But if you are able to translate what you're hearing that fast at that level, that is like a gift that is, you need to be doing that all the time.
That and being entertaining, because like the arena that you're in is an entertainment space. So it's necessary for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, if they're like looking at the interpreter, to feel, You want to feel like you're
that's incredible.
Connected, so you don't want to just be standing there just signing super fast. Like, you know, you want to dance and you want to have the faces, and it's just, it's so much, I don't know. There have been like a couple of clips that have like gone viral, and it really is so fascinating. It's so fun. I don't know, and I never knew that that existed, but I feel like there are more and more, like there are more and more artists and creators who are like trying to incorporate signing into like entertainment opportunities. Even like anime, like there's a show that I watched, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the main character is deaf and mute. And so he like is, and he's like very small, and his like father is a king and he's really strong, but he didn't grow, he like was born without the strength of his father. Mm-hmm. And so everyone like thinks he can't rule the kingdom, and he goes on this little quest to like prove himself, and he finds his own way of being a really strong leader and fighter. But they sign in the show. And it's animated, which is really cool. And then they also, like, it's not, like, othering him as the character. Like, there's
it's just a part of, right. It's just a part of the challenge of, like, okay, I'm going to find my way, my path, my opportunity. So it's not like a, And I think we all are dealing with that all the time, you know.
What was it like with, for your, like, mom and dad and family? Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have a brother. I have a fabulous brother.
And he is not hard of hearing.
No, he's not hard of hearing.
That's so interesting. So what was that like growing up together? Like, would he, like, before you had, like, a way to hear him, like, were you just...
I think we were just typical. No, my brother and I have always been able to communicate.
Awesome.
I mean, to this day. And my brother is just one of those amazing people that he... reads people so well. He always just kind of like shows up at the right time, right place, whatever. He's very, very, very grounded. People love being around him. He's an artist. He's done a lot of different things. So he's got a lot of versatility. He also had his own obstacles growing up and had some different challenges. So we both had different things that we had to contend with. Okay. And I just know that we always, I mean, we were the typical brother and sister in certain things where we would fight and argue and do whatever. But we are most definitely best friends. And I never, ever, ever felt disabled around my brother, ever.
Yeah.
So it's important for, like, the people around you to, like, what would you say on that? Like, how would you, how would you speak on that? Like, being brought up, like, in your family and then so, like, you have... like, you know, you're hard of hearing, but members of your family aren't. What is the best way to for them to navigate? Like, is there anything that, is it just the same? It's just completely, there's nothing that's different than being able to hear or not hear anything? Or are there like specific things where people are like, you know, oh yeah, just be more mindful of that or...
Well, I think that whenever it comes to that, that there are like you have parents that have deaf children, and then you have deaf parents that have hearing children. You've got all across the board with all of that, and it does create for different communication, obviously. So, and I think the complexity of if you have hearing parents is that hidden disability. So, whenever you talk about any hidden disability, and it doesn't have to be hearing loss. It can be extremely difficult for a parent that has not experienced that and hasn't been around it to know what to do and how to relate. And there can also be that sense of sometimes I think with parents it might be that sense of, oh, did I do something wrong? Or, you know what, other people aren't going to be able to relate. Am I going to feel embarrassed about having my child in the presence of others? There's all those different variables that can come into play. So it's an extremely complex process. So it's not like there's one finite means. But I think that like what I started doing is, especially as it relates to equal access and realizing, because also with hearing loss, it stretches way beyond just hearing loss. I started doing an empowerment workshop. And that gets back to helping parents that are dealing with anything that's different. Even just raising quote-unquote two normal children can be very, very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. That we talked about empowerment. So it's about, hey, what do I do to make sure I'm taking care of myself first, and then I'll be able to take care of my child, and not to focus on what you perceive as wrong, but to focus on the child as a well-rounded human being who just happens to have autism, who just happens to have a hearing loss, who just happens to have. Now, in my case, with my family, I had kind of like two extremes. I had a father who was not really interested in disabilities, and then I had a mother who was the epitome of advocacy mm-hmm. and thinking outside the box in terms of wanting to do anything possible. But by the same token, also, she never, ever, ever treated us as disabled, ever. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think that's important. And I think it made the difference. My brother beat tremendous odds, and I beat tremendous odds. I mm-hmm. think I've learned, especially since I got my cochlear implant, I'm realizing how I did better probably than some other people that would be in the same position I was in. And it's probably a lot of that would be due to the parenting.
Yeah. Stick around for part two of this episode, Mental Health and Hidden Disabilities.